Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.
Welcome back to Breakfast 91.3 FM on the Voice of the Cape, brought to you with the kind compliments of California Spur, Westgate Mall. Call 021-3700-467. Now remember, you have a few minutes left to SMS your name and California Spur 247913. And of course, you then get a chance of winning a Spur voucher at the end of the week on Friday. But today, it's Wednesday, Klein Saturday, and my favorite part of the show. Welcome to episode 3 of Labor Lowdown. Now remember, you can download the series post-broadcast at iono.fm. And as always, my guest has a master's degree in labor law, currently completing his PhD in employee relations, and is also trend commissioner of the CCMA. Shahid Abada, once again, assalamu alaikum and shukran for joining us.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, Ghulam. Happy to be here once again. And I hope that everything is going good your side.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. I know you were, traveling and all of that, and I hope you recovered as well.
I'm good. It's always good to be back in South Africa. We've got some nice weather down in Port Elizabeth again, so it's going okay.
Now, fantastic. Shahid, you know, we have set down a set structure for the show. And, you know, the funny part is that of the 12 or 10 questions that we wanted to kick the show off with, we probably answered about 6, and there were like another 5 or so remaining, because we are making way for the questions that are coming through. We're getting a numerous amount of questions, you know, and I'm trying to squeeze them in, because obviously we're doing this for the listeners. So I'm trying to squeeze them in as tightly as I can into our conversation. In past programs, we spoke about the formation of the employment contract. Then we moved along to the different types of leave and how do you apply for the leave, etc. And then more questions just came about. But before we get into the questions, there are two questions that I'd like to speak to you about, firstly, before we move on to that, because that's going to sort of tie us into the questions that came from our listener. So just to look at some of the formation terms of the employment contract, you know, the relationship of the employer and the employee, we also come across words such as tacit and implied terms, you know, the terminologies that they use. So can we look at what does tacitly or implied terms actually mean, and then just sort of break that down for us as well?
So tacit is something that, you know, is a term that you don't really have to write down. You don't have to write down in the employment contract that the employee has to basically attend work every day, okay? So you give me an employment contract, I accept the employment, I'm going to provide my labor, you're going to pay me every day. But I don't necessarily have to stipulate in the contract, look, you have to come to work every day, right? That's a tacit term that is in an employment contract. An implied term is something that is essentially a standardized term amounting to a rule in law or the courts. It can be validly excluded by the contract itself. The tacit term, on the other hand, is a provision by which must be found. It's found at all in the unexpressed intention of the party. So that's the difference really between tacit and implied terms.
In a nutshell, I think we can probably, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, you know, break it down tacitly, like you mentioned. It's not something that has to be written down. So it's something that is reasonably expected if you and I have got an agreement.
Exactly.
That I should just rock up for work. I don't have to put that in writing.
Absolutely. Okay. But, you know, we do have instances where the employees then stay out of work. Then employers start formulating attendance contracts and attendance bonuses, sick leave or absenteeism policies and things like that. There are things that stem from these tacit terms, which, you know, if I use the example of coming to work every day, you know, goes a little bit further, where employers then wrap that up in policies and so on.
You'd remember me saying that I've got two questions that I've got to ask, and I want to tie it in. And this is the one question that was part of our series breakdown, but somehow it also ties into a question that we received from one of our listeners. Uh-huh. I wanted you to speak about the required numbers of hours that one can work, if you can break that down for us. And then also, and this ties in with a question from the listener that wanted to know, how many days leave does one get? Is it 15 or is it 20 days? And I thought I'll just tie up the question.
Okay, so let's start with the work week. It's in Chapter 2 of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, the last time. So it says in the Basic Conditions that no employer shall require or permit an employee to work more than 45 hours in a week. 9 hours in any day. If an employee works a 5-day week or less than a 5-day week, and 8 hours in a day if the employee works more than 5 days in a week. So the maximum time that the employee can actually work is 45 hours a week. Anything after that is obviously overtime, and then Sunday work is Sunday work. It's treated separately in the basic conditions of employment. And if we look at overtime per se, it says here in the law that under Section 10 that an employer may not require or permit an employee to work overtime except by an agreement and to work more than 10 hours overtime in a week. So these provisions are basically in the basic conditions. It's in the bargaining councils as well. So an agreement may not require or permit an employee to work more than 12 hours in a day. A collective agreement may increase overtime to 15 hours per week, up to 2 months in any period of 12 months. So, but let's get back to the basics. The basics is really 45 hours a week and not more than 10 hours overtime in a week as well.
Shahid, how does that impact on shift workers? Because obviously the timing and the hours allocated to shift workers is a little bit different, isn't it?
Okay, so there's no legal interpretation for shift work. Basically, the only shifts that are defined is your night shifts or your night work. That is clearly defined in the law under Section 17. So if you take a morning shift, which is normally like 6-2, it's still a 45-hour week. It's still 8 hours a day. An afternoon shift, which normally runs from 2:10, from 2 o'clock in the afternoon until 10 o'clock at night, the same provisions will apply. But when it comes to night work, there's a little bit of a difference when it comes to that. So one must go back to the law and look at what night work actually means. So night work means any time from 1800 in the evening until 6 o'clock the next day. And it says an employer may not require or permit an informal night work if so agreed, and if the employee is compensated by the payment of allowances, which may be a shift allowance or reduction of working time. And I know in a lot of organizations, especially factories that have three-shift operation, the night work guys, and it depends really here on the employer. The employer may give a 10% night shift allowance because of inconvenience and that. So a lot of employees, even though they don't like working night shift, there is actually some financial benefit in working night shift.
And I'm sure somebody's going to be very happy about that. Shahid, I want to move into our questions that we received from our listeners. I've got about 5 minutes or so before we need to wrap it up. The next one says, and I read it verbatim, it says, Assalamu alaikum. I want to know how to calculate my tax. I have a rate of 34.74 per hour and received a 145 rand attendance bonus. On overtime, we can easily average at 1,675 rand. Tax is 73 rand. But if I don't work overtime, I get taxed 15 rand.
Ghulam, this is for me a very funny part of employee behavior. Okay, it's a difficult issue and a very emotive issue. When employees work, they have to pay tax. Okay, we all have to pay tax. And I think all of us, if we look at our payslips at the end of the month, and we see the amount of tax that goes to government, we really become frustrated with that. And unfortunately, you know, tax is tax. Mm. So there are tax tables that every organization has. And these tax tables have been made available from government, obviously through the finance ministry. That was a good thing that we welcomed from the Minister of Finance and from government, that there was absolutely no change to the personal income tax. Now, the question from your listener is a question that we get all the time in organizations. Employees, you know, when they work normal time, they pay tax. When they work overtime, they pay more tax. And the problem with that is they sort of think that, you know what, too much of my money that I work for on a Saturday or Sunday is now going towards taxes. The unfortunate part is that tax tables are really loaded by employers, and if they load it properly, then employees who earn up to 195,000 rand a year will pay 18% tax. And sometimes employees who work, like the listener in your who posed the question, he will have issues because, you know, the tax is now calculated at 18% of his salary if he's now under 195,000. If he's between 195,000 and 305,000, then he'll still pay 26% tax for anything that is above 195,000. And, you know, the tax tables are there. So one can go through it. The tax tables are available. Employees must understand that taxes are calculated per annum. If all your taxes have been calculated and properly deducted by your employer, then you will owe SARS nothing. If an employee feels that he's been overtaxed, SARS will definitely pick that up when the employee submits his income tax return and he has an IRP5, then you will obviously get money back from SARS. Tax law, it's a very difficult part of our law. It actually doesn't fall within the realms of labor law. It's more under tax. It's more, your CAs and your BCom guys that deal with the tax question. But I answer the question because I get faced with this question almost every day where people, have a huge issue with giving such a huge percentage of their money over to government.
Yes, dude, it's a hell of a lot of money, eh?
I think we all kind of sweat when we have to pay taxes.
Exactly.
I think it's a bigger problem when you owe SARS money at the end of the year. You don't really want that kind of problem.
Exactly.
It's a nice problem to have when you're actually getting, when it says due to you, it's
exactly.
actually much better.
Exactly. Shahid, the next question says, I've won an arbitration award to be reinstated by the company, but the company wants to review at the labor court. And then I inquired at the labor court, but no case was on the roll. What can I do?
Okay, this is a very important question, a very important issue. If an employee has won the arbitration, there is absolutely no need for the employee to report for duty if the company then decides that they want to take the matter on review. However, this listener who posed this question must understand that for every day that he's not in work, the employer is actually running up a tally. Although he's not physically getting the money, he's being paid. The organization is actually making a provision to pay that money over to him. The labor court actually forces any employer who wants to take a matter on review, forces them to sort of show that they can financially settle the bill with this employee, should this employee win the matter at the labor court. Now, I know that's frustrating. So a lot of employers take matters on review, even though they sometimes don't have a really good case, just to frustrate these employees. But I can assure you that your listener can be quite comfortable that there is a budget running up at whoever his employer is, and they owe him a lot of money should this matter go on. The most important thing is for him to go and make sure to go back to the labor court and to go to the court clerk and make sure that this matter is actually enrolled. And if not, he can go back to the CCMA and complain that the company has not implemented the order of the commissioner, which was to reinstate him.
When you've got a particular interest like you and I in the subject, then we can talk about this forever. I want to squeeze in, I promised that I was going to squeeze in this question before we wrap it up, Shahid. It says, I'm a business owner and wanted to know whether it's legal to request new recruits to undergo a drug test.
So the short answer, Ghulam, for the sake of time, yes, testing is allowed and you are given that right in terms of the Act number 140 of 1992, which is the Drug and Drug Trafficking Act, as well as the Occupational Safety Act. So every employer has the right to ensure that other employees have a safe environment. And if he feels that he needs to drug test all employees, as long as he doesn't discriminate, okay? So whatever test an employer decides must comply with Section 7 of the Employment Equity Act, 55 of 1998. In terms of Section 7, the test must be permitted or required by law, or must be justifiable in light of medical facts, employment conditions, and social policy. So, yes, you can do drug testing. We do that all the time to ensure that, say, for example, a person is going to operate heavy equipment like heisters and so on, that person must be completely drug-free, even from marijuana, so that person doesn't endanger the lives of other people. So, yes, the short answer is the employer can actually do drug tests.
Shahid Abada, I'm going to have to leave it there. Shukran so much for your time this morning on Breakfast 91.3 FM. And again, I'm sure there's going to be floods of questions coming through again. And we will tackle that next week in episode 4 of Labor Lowdown, inshallah. Shukran so much for your time. Assalamu alaikum.
Shukran, Ghulam, and all the best to you and Voice of Escape and your show. And assalamu alaikum to you and your listeners.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Breakfast Beat on 91.3 FM. Your voice in the morning.